first, a lot of people like organic produce. Maybe they think it's fresher or tastes better, or maybe they think it's better for the environment. On that last point, some research is starting to suggest that small organic farms may not be the solution for environmental problems in agriculture. Nathaniel Johnson is a senior writer at Grist. Nathaniel, welcome to Central Time.
Hey, great to be here.
Well, a lot of people think organic farming equals better for the environment. What are some of the concerns being raised about that idea?
This is a really tricky one to communicate because, you know, even the name organic suggests just naturally arising from the environment. But, you know, we got to keep in mind that all farming requires pushing nature to do something that it wouldn't do on its own. And so when you look at the totality of the studies, it's hard to find a real environmental benefit comparing organic to conventional agriculture.
And a big story at the heart of this is, how much land are we using to get the food we eat? How are people trying to shake that out and compare organic to what we call conventional farming?
So, that's really the trick. I mean, organic farming, there's the evidence when you look at just a single piece of land, right? Organic farming tends to have some real benefits there. But because it's producing less food per acre, those benefits can get watered down when instead you're looking at the unit of food. So if you're choosing between one food or another food in the supermarket, what you really want to do is look at, you know, how much land does this take up? Because in terms of farming, the biggest impact on the environment is the amount of land that it's occupying. If we convert it entirely to organic agriculture, the calculations suggest that we need about, and we didn't change anything else, we need about the area of Argentina to add in as more farmland under the plow. And so that has a really big impact on the climate and biodiversity and a lot of other things.
Now, it's not a total negative for organics. There are some ways that you and others have talked about that small-scale organic farming is beneficial, maybe in particular locations for that matter. Can you talk about some of the upsides that people are mostly agreeing on?
Yeah, so this goes back to, again, are you looking at it by the unit of land or by the unit of food? So if you're making a decision about one particular piece of land, and you know, okay, we've got to do farming here. We're not going to dedicate this to wildlife. This is important to this community that there's a farm here, but it's right next to, say, a wilderness preserve, or it's right next to some endangered insect. Well, there's a real benefit to doing organic farming there, because organic farms tend to put less pressure on, you know, insect species. They're using often less insecticides, and so there's a little bit more biodiversity on that particular unit of land. It could provide a sort of buffer, and you know, often people want something like that close to them too. So you could imagine, you know, around cities, you might want more organic farms as well.
Talking to Nathaniel Johnson, senior writer at Grist, talk about how researchers are trying to balance the environmental costs and benefits of converting to organic agriculture. Not always easy to sort out. Nate, I've seen some researchers say, as you said earlier, the cost in land of switching completely to organic agriculture would be bad news. It'd be more harm than good. But they may argue it's good that we have organic, because they're trying some new things that then percolate over into the rest of the agricultural system. They're kind of like a test lab that we're learning things from, even if we don't want to go all organic. Do you see a case to be made there?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, what organic essentially is doing, it's placing some restrictions on farmers, and that forces those farmers to innovate in some interesting and different ways. And so we get some new ideas, we get some new techniques, and we've already started to see that happen in some interesting ways. And it's going to be really interesting. You know, we still don't know exactly how to get carbon into the soil. There's all this idea that we can suck up carbon in the plants and get it stored in the soil. And the evidence there is still real. You know, we've studied the first 30 centimeters of soil, and you get deeper than that, and some important things happen, but we just don't have any studies on that. And so having some alternative systems to show what works and what doesn't in different climates and under different systems of agriculture will really help us figure things out.
You know, something I probably should ask you right at the outset, we hear organic and we assume a lot of things, but organic actually has a fairly specific meaning, at least as regulated in U.S. agriculture. What does it mean to be organic?
Well, there is a very specific meaning. There's a big PDF that you can read to explain all the different things. But just to put it simply, there's basically some suggestions for farmers about conserving the soil, about using pesticides as little as possible, and then when they do use pesticides, to use only from an approved list, you know, things that like copper sulfate or some oil products that like smother insects. So basically a preference for less engineered, less high-tech products and processes.
But hypothetically, somebody could be doing something in agriculture that is a net environmental gain or trying to be a gain, you know, when it comes to global warming or other impacts, but not be organic. There could be other ways to tackle the issues we want without being under that organic label. Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. And I think that, you know, if you wanted to really optimize and maximize, you probably wouldn't choose organic. You'd say, okay, I want to be as efficient as possible and use, you know, maximize the amount of food that I can get off this particular amount of land, but use whatever techniques and tools it takes to get there. So, you know, if I can maybe use a synthetic pesticide that's not allowed under organic, but I just use it very surgically and I just use it, you know, there's some of these pesticides that target very precisely specific species, and just use a tiny bit rather than, you know, using a lot of an oil or something like that that might target more species. You could see where you could really narrow in, and there are farmers that are doing this. The trick is we don't have anything like that codified into law or labeled with a brand that consumers can pick from.
And that seems like a really key point, the consumer side of this, because if you're at a grocery store and you see, you know, one thing that says organic, one thing that doesn't, okay, you could see that. But if you're saying, hey, consumer, try to figure out the net, carbon impact of this piece of produce versus that one. Right. It's really hard. So how do we start to do this in a way that makes sense to consumers?
Well, I think it's absolutely impossible to like go through and decode the entire supply chain of this international economy. I think the answer is to make it so that there's no other choice but things that are environmentally friendly, and that's, we see some signs of this happening where environmental groups are sort of bullying / teaming up with some of the giant agricultural traders and saying, look, you've got to take these best practices and make sure they're happening around the world. And it's interesting. It's happening in some places. It's happening with certain commodities. And you don't have to get that many people on board because there's this real bottleneck in the number of you know, traders in the middle that kind of move grains from one continent to another. So if you can get those giant majors on board, and we're starting to see this, like, for instance, with palm oil, there's real pressure. It's very hard to be a real unsustainable palm oil producer now and sell products into the global market and back to the United States. So there is some hope that this could really be happening.
Now, what are some, as we wrap up, Nate, what are some changes that you're watching for to see whether or not they're going to happen when it comes to agriculture and the environment?
Well, just examples like that. I mean, things are not great right now. With, you know, Brazil was the real success story. With we'd really through these kinds of initiatives reined in the destruction of the Amazon rainforest. And now under Brazil's new president, we've seen that reaccelerate. And some of these big producers feel like they can't stand up to them. You know, they'll just get kicked out of the country and won't be able to compete if they force farmers to stop cutting the rainforest down. So that's one I'm really watching carefully to see, you know, will the international community be able to push back on that? And then closer to home, just, you know, there's some really interesting ways in which farming in the U.S. is cleaning up its act with cover crops and filtering out nitrogen and phosphorus that otherwise would go down into the Gulf of Mexico and Lake Erie. That's still very small, but there's some signs that it's maybe on an exponential curve that could really make a big difference.
Nathaniel, thanks a lot for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Nathaniel Johnson, senior writer at Grist. He was with us today to talk about sustainable agriculture. He says it's more than just organic or not.